The NHL trade deadline has come and gone, but what teams have made their team better for the future? We will talk about that and much more in today's episode of Locked On NHL.
Your Locked On NHL, your daily podcast on the National Hockey League. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hello and welcome back to Locked On NHL Western Conference Tuesdays, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. I am Brett Holden from Locked On Oilers, and joining me as always on Tuesdays, Dane Lewis from Locked On Stars. Dane, how are you doing this wonderful Tuesday?
I'm doing great. The trade deadline is come and gone. I know we're talking about that today, about 20 games, give or take, left for each team. And then it's playoff time. So this is the fun part of the season where we find out who's going to the playoffs. I feel like we know a lot of the teams that are going to be there, but now it's all about seeding. So I'm excited for the next few weeks and excited to dive into some trade talk today, but maybe not the trade talk that people are expecting in terms of the teams that we're going to talk about.
Absolutely. It seems like the last couple of weeks, all we've talked about is trades, and this will be the last time we talk about trades, probably until the off season, at least, as today we are going to be talking about the NHL trade deadline that has passed. But we always talked about the contenders, who is going to get better for the playoffs this year. But how about the teams who are looking to get better past the playoffs this year? How about the race for Bedard? How about even farther into the future? We will talk about the teams who have made themselves better at the bottom of the standings in just a second. But also on today's episode, we're going to talk about the Calgary Flames. As the Calgary Flames continue their regression, it seems like they may miss the playoffs despite being favorites at the start of the season. That has been an insane downfall recently, but a big win against the Dallas Stars. All that and much more on today's episode of Locked On NHL. Thank you for making Locked On NHL your first listen every day. We are free and available wherever you find your podcast. Dane, the last couple of weeks have been trade this, trade that. Even that sound was going off when a trade was going on. But now the trade deadline has passed and the contenders have become even more contendery, and the sellers have sold off or sold off their assets here. So what teams have sold off their assets the best? I mean, we got a couple of teams in the Western Conference sitting at the bottom of the NHL, including the Chicago Blackhawks, the San Jose Sharks, the Anaheim Ducks, and the Arizona Coyotes. So let's start off with the two teams at the bottom of the standings, Chicago and San Jose. Let's start off with Chicago. Dane, Chicago had a lot of pieces that they could have potentially sold off, including fan favorite and honestly one of the greatest Blackhawks of all time, Patrick Kane. There was also rumors that they were going to send off Jonathan Toews as well. Unfortunately for him, some health problems prevented that. But a couple of moves still in the works, including Max Domi, who went to your Dallas Stars. Talk to me about the moves that the Chicago Blackhawks have made, and do you think they sent out the right people as of right now?
I think so. I think they sent out the right people, and some of the returns, it kind of depends on which trades you look at. I feel like they could have gotten a lot more than what they got. I mean, even starting with the Max Domi trade, they send off Dylan Wells, an AHL goaltender, and then in exchange for Domi, who was, you know, having one of his best seasons, he was leading the team in scoring, they only get a 2025 second round pick and Anton Khudobin, who maybe could retire at the end of this season, just given injuries and age and things of that nature. So, I mean, I think it's wise to sell Domi, but I think it's more of a masterclass move from Jim Neal and the Dallas Stars to get a piece like Domi without really sacrificing too much of the future, because the 2025 draft is a good ways away and it's a second round pick. But I mean, there's so many other moves that this team made. I mean, the Kane deal was a three-team trade. They send off Lafferty, Jake McCabe to Toronto. I mean, just looking at their trade moves here on Cap Friendly, I mean, they were certainly active. I just don't know if they got quite the haul that maybe a lot of people envisioned them getting. They're obviously still in a really good spot to potentially get Connor Bedard. I think that they could very well have the first or second overall pick, just given their record and points. I don't know. I think they're set up well for the future, but I don't think they got as much as some other teams did. So long term, I don't know how we'll look at this deadline, you know, 3-4 years from now. But I do think that they got rid of the right pieces and at least got some good return for players that they probably weren't going to bring back in the summer.
The Chicago Blackhawks at this deadline sent out Max Domi, Dylan Wells, Dylan Sakura, Patrick Kane, Jake McCabe, Sam Lafferty, Jack Johnson, and Hunter Drew. In return for all of those players, the acquired players include, or acquired pieces include, Austin Wagner, Anton Hudobin, a 2025 second, Anders Bjork, a second conditional pick, which came in the Patrick Kane deal, a conditional second round pick for Patrick Kane, 2023 fourth, Ville Sarajärvi, who is a prospect, Andy Walensky, Joey Anderson, Pavel Gogolev, a first round pick in 2025, a second round pick in 2026, and a couple more prospects as well, including Nikita Zaitsev, who's not a prospect, but also is included in that. They have 19 picks in the top three rounds, the first three rounds between 2023, 2024, and 2025, including four second round picks next year, or in this year's draft, excuse me. But the reason why I mentioned that is because, yes, you can sit there and go, oh, those are a lot of draft capital players, but you got to also realize you can use those as pieces in trades. So a little bit of both. I think Chicago did well in this situation, but I think they could have gotten more for the player, like a conditional second round pick that could very well turn into a first for Patrick Kane, but the key word is could. I think that's horrendous. So I think overall they got a great return in everything, but I think they could have gotten better returns in individual deals. Let's move on to the 30th place team in the NHL. That is the San Jose Sharks, who had basically the most amount of assets and two of the biggest fishes of sorts, excuse the pun, in the sea at the trade deadline, including Timo Meier and Erik Karlsson. However, Timo Meier, the only one of those two getting moved. Now, Dane, Timo Meier getting moved, a couple of pieces, a big, big, honestly, the biggest trade probably of the trade deadline there. What do you think of the return for Timo Meier? And did the San Jose Sharks really set themselves up for, even just on this one deal alone, for success in the future?
I don't really know if they did. And I know we talked about this a little bit last week because the deal went down well before deadline week occurred, but it's similar, I think, to the Patrick Kane deal in that I think they got some decent return, and obviously time will tell with some of these prospects and obviously draft picks. But I mean, Timo Meier is a guy who is, I mean, that is a season altering player for the Devils, who are already, you know, having a heck of a year. I mean, I think that they're maybe in the top three of teams that could, you know, win the East. So you add a player like Timo Meier to that mix. And I just don't know if the Sharks, kind of similar to Chicago, got all that they could. I mean, again, a conditional first round pick in 2023, a second round pick, again, that's conditional in 2024, and then a seventh round pick in 2024. And so it's, I don't know. I don't want to say it's a bad trade, because I think the Sharks had to do something in order to get a return for Meier. Because again, similar to Chicago, I don't know if you're banking on Timo Meier coming back next season. He's probably going to explore his options elsewhere. But I do think the Sharks made some other decent moves around the deadline. Obviously, the Meier one is the one that we're going to talk about the most, just because that's the biggest name player, like you said. But I do think that they made some other decent moves and that set themselves up okay for the future. I think that they also have some pretty good guys already in their system that they're bringing up. And I, you know, new GM, still relatively new leadership across this organization. It's weird to kind of guess where the Sharks are going to be in a few seasons, just because everything does still feel so new with this organization and where they're at right now, where they still have some other guys like Tomáš Hertl, who's been around with the team for a while, Logan Couture, who's the captain of the team, and Erik Karlsson sticking around. I think that was a fine move by the Sharks to not send him off, because it would have been hard to send him off with that cap hit. And now you have a guy that, even though it's been a bad season, you might get to watch one of your players win a big NHL award in the Norris Trophy. I think Chicago and San Jose are kind of in a similar boat, though, where they probably could have gotten a lot more, but it's not an awful deadline in my eyes.
I don't know. I think the San Jose Sharks had so much more to give. You mentioned Tomáš Hertl. I think tons of teams would love Tomáš Hertl's services. I mean, he does have a long contract that goes until 2029, 2030. Yeah. So that may be for a guy who's already 29 years old. Okay, fair enough. But it's still a player who is appetizing to other teams. I don't think Logan Couture would go anywhere, but you still got guys like obviously Erik Karlsson. I wanted to mention Radim Šimek as well. You hear about JD over at Locked On Sharks as well, always talking about James Reimer eventually getting moved too. And the fact that they only moved Timo Meier in a deal that I don't think is really satisfactory to what they could have and should have gotten for Timo Meier. Timo Meier, Scott Harrington, Timur Abragamov, was trying to say somebody else, Santeri Hataka, and Zachary Edmund, plus a 2024 fifth round pick, all to send off Timo Meier. In return for 50% of the salary of Timo Meier, Andreas Janssen, Fabian Zetterlund, Shakir Mukhamudulin, and Nikita Okatuyak. I promised I was going to get that right the first time, but obviously not. 2023 conditional first, 2024 conditional second, and a seventh round pick. To me, that just doesn't seem like that's a big haul. But for me, that's a big haul for the big haul that this New Jersey Devils are already acquiring. That's not a big haul for Timo Meier. In the next, and I just mentioned the 19 picks for the Chicago Blackhawks, this San Jose Sharks over the next 3 years, in the first three rounds, only have 10 picks. In the first three rounds, and have traded their third round pick in 2023, 2024, their fifth and sixth round pick, or their fourth and fifth round pick in 2024 as well. Those aren't moves that I think a upgrading or rebuilding team should be making. But I also, at the same time, think that most of these deals are going to be made in the offseason for the San Jose Sharks. Erik Karlsson, I think he's bound to be moved. I don't know where. Wink, wink, nod, nod. But I think that he will get moved in the offseason. Maybe the same with Tomáš Hertl. You can go down the list, James Reimer as well. I think these are going to be offseason moves. But for right now, for the sake of this conversation, I think they heavily failed at the trade deadline. I don't know. Am I being too harsh just to wrap up?
No, I don't think so. I mean, say what you want about Chicago. We were just kind of critical of them, but they acquired a lot of draft capital. Again, we don't know how those guys are going to pan out, but what, 4 second-round picks? And later in this year's draft, the Sharks do have 3 seventh-round picks, but I mean, it's round 7. I know they have a history of, I mean, Joe Pavelski was drafted by them. He was a 6th or 7th-round pick. So sometimes those picks hit, but I mean, the odds of 3 of them hitting is not super high. Yeah, I don't think you're being too harsh, and I agree. I think they could make some moves, even outside the big names in the offseason, like Kevin LeBanc, I know, was kind of not heavy rumors during the deadline, but I think he's a guy who could get moved. Alexander Barabanov, guys who only have a year or two left on their deal and aren't as expensive as a Tomáš Hertl or an Erik Karlsson. I think that they could afford to make some moves in the offseason, and I agree. I think we're more likely to see that. And I'm curious to see what those moves look like and what the return is for those, and then where that puts the Sharks in terms of their trajectory going forward.
100%. And also, I think trading Mikey Iisimon is an absolutely horrible move, but that's okay. We move on. There are still two other teams at the bottom of the table for the Western Conference who made a couple of interesting moves at the trade deadline. So did they put themselves in better position than the San Jose Sharks or the Chicago Blackhawks. We will talk about that in just a second. But first, today's episode is brought to you by FanDuel. The midway point of the NBA season is here, and now is the perfect time to download FanDuel, America's number one sportsbook, because new customers get a no-sweat first bet up to $1,000. That is bonus bets back if your first bet doesn't win. Just download the FanDuel Sportsbook app. It is safe, secure, and super easy to use. Then you can bet on everything from the money line to point scores to threes drain. Now, of course, I'm a Clippers fan. I don't want to talk to you, Dane, about anything basketball because you have broken my heart way too many times, especially with number 77. But the king or the kingza of Los Angeles, the Clippers aren't playing tonight. But the Lakers are against the Grizzlies, who are without Ja Morant for obvious reasons. But they have a very interesting line, a minus 106 money line for the Lakers, a minus 110 for the Grizz. This is going to be a tight one, but the point spread is at a 225. The over sits at minus 110. So 225 without the king as well for the Lakers. See, the Lakers are kingless. What are we talking about with the Lakers, man? They're unserious. The Clippers are better than the Lakers, and the Lakers are not better than whatever. It doesn't matter. FanDuel even lets you combine your bets for a chance at a bigger payout with the same game parlay. So you can't miss. So don't miss the chance to get your no sweat first bet up to $1,000 in bonus bets when you go to FanDuel.com/lockedon. That is FanDuel.com/lockedon. To learn more, make every moment more with FanDuel, an official sports betting partner of the NBA. Alrighty, Dane, what is it about these California teams, San Jose? Now we're heading to Anaheim. Then the next stop is going to be Arizona. What is it with these beautiful destinations, huh? Let's talk about Anaheim, the land of Disney. Great city. I love Anaheim, but not a fantastic hockey team right now. Very interesting pieces to sell, more specifically John Klingberg, who they signed to a one-year $7 million contract, and it took almost right down to the wire to move this guy. Was signing John Klingberg to a $7 million deal a bad idea, Dane?
I think maybe a little bit, just given what we know the Ducks are this year. Like, I think they had to have known that they weren't going to be a good team, and that has been on full display from game one of the season for this Ducks squad. And so it was just kind of bizarre. And I know John Klingberg wanted his money. That's why he didn't stick around in Dallas, because he knew he wasn't going to get that $7 million contract. And so I think now he has to be elated to be in a situation where he's competing for, you know, first in the Central Division and potentially even first in the West, depending on how things go here over the final month or so of the season. And you know, Anaheim retains 50% of that deal, so I'm sure Minnesota's excited to have that, as well as adding a veteran defenseman who's been in the playoffs before, who's been to the Cup Finals, you know, not too long ago, just a few years ago. And it's just weird looking back. I feel like we're going to look back on that move and be like, why did the Ducks sign a veteran defenseman to a team that was going to be nowhere near the playoffs? And I guess they got a decent return. They got two AHL guys and names that I know I'm not going to be able to say, so I'm not even going to try. But and then a fourth round pick in 2025, so I feel like that's about right for a move like that. I mean, Klingberg with that cap hit, even with 50% retained, wasn't going to be the easiest to move, but I guess they did find a way to do it, and there's a good chance Klingberg wasn't coming back with that one-year deal. He's probably going to look to move on. So at least the Ducks did get something. But I mean, thankfully, that's also not the only move they made. They were pretty active for leading up to the deadline, and obviously on deadline day as well, making moves with Pittsburgh and Buffalo, Chicago. I mean, they were kind of all over the place.
Yeah, that Dmitry Kulikov move kind of confuses me as well. Not so much that I don't know if they should have made the trade. It's just a weird move. We'll get to that in a second. But just to recap the Klingberg trade, John Klingberg is on his way to the Minnesota Wild for Andre Schuster, Nikita Nestoranko, the rights to Nikita Nestoranko, fourth round pick in 2025. And as you mentioned, Dane, 50% retention on that Klingberg deal. But let's move to the other big defenseman that moved for the Anaheim Ducks, Dmitry Kulikov, which they sent off to the Pittsburgh Penguins for Brock McGinn, a third round pick, a very vague third round pick, and 50% retention of the deal or of Kulikov's deal as well. Again, specifically for the deadline, I don't know if this was the best, but at the same time, there was only so much that the Ducks could have done with Klingberg's value. I think at the start of the year, there were so many suitors for him and wanted him earlier than the deadline. But as the season kept going and his regression continued, he wasn't a $7 million player. And heck, even the 50% that he's being paid right now may not be a good reflection as to the player he actually is.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I just don't see this being a real win for the Anaheim Ducks, for a team that, unless they do get Bedard, I still don't see them having a very good future for at least another 3, 4, 5 years.
Yeah, I would agree with that. It feels kind of similar to San Jose, and you know, they still only have one first round pick that's their own, and they have, I think, 15 over the next 3 years in the first three rounds. So not awful. Like, they have 3 second round picks in this year's draft. They have Minnesota's third round pick. And I think it could also be similar that maybe they make some moves in the offseason as well. But I also think the Ducks have maybe more young pieces that they are confident in. And, you know, Zegras, McTavish. I think that there's a few other pieces there that maybe San Jose doesn't quite have just yet, or at least not NHL ready. I know William Eklund is getting some looks up in San Jose, but I don't know. I'm torn. I could go back and forth on which team, at least in the Pacific, is closer to being a quote unquote playoff team again, and the Ducks and Sharks. I feel like both teams are still a good ways away.
Yeah.
But yeah, I agree. This feel for a team that we knew wasn't going to be very good and has been, you know, near the bottom of the standings for the most of the season. It feels like a little bit of an underwhelming deadline.
Yeah.
Obviously you're, I guess, glad to move on from Klingberg and to get some sort of return there, but I was I feel like they were more active last year and they were a better team in the early part. Like, it was weird. I feel like the roles have reversed, where they actually looked pretty good early last year, fell off a little bit, knew what the season was, made big moves. And then this year, when you know all season long that you're not going to be a good team, that you're not going to sniff the playoffs, and to have a deadline like this, it feels a little underwhelming.
100%. 100%. I think a lot of the moves will need to be done, but in the offseason, but I think the big loss for the Ducks is the fact that you mentioned those 15 top three picks or top three, whatever, you know what I'm saying here.
Yes.
But the interesting thing is that they only have one first round pick in each of those years. In 23, 24, 25, they only have their own picks. So for a team who wants to get better, that first round is probably the best place to do it. And you still got players like, I'm curious about guys like Maxime Comtois, where talk was hot earlier in the year, and then all of a sudden the deadline came and there was nothing on him. Adam Henrique as well, who would have gotten a really nice return. Kevin Shattenkirk, there was talk about Cam Fowler early in the year too. I don't think that's realistic, but still, those are guys who would still get returned. John Gibson too. So I don't know. Weird situation in Anaheim. We'll see what they do in the offseason. But for the deadline, another fail I would give them too. The final team in the bottom five for the Western Conference, or in the NHL for the Western Conference, is the Arizona Coyotes, who had arguably the biggest chip in this game. Jacob Chychrun, who is now an Ottawa Senator, a very interesting move in that one. Also sending off Nick Ritchie and Troy Stetcher to the Calgary Flames. Nick Bjugstad and Cam Dineen to the Edmonton Oilers. John Gillies in exchange for, yes, Jakub Voracek, the newest Arizona Coyote. They also sent off Shane Goss's bear to the Carolina Hurricanes and was a part of that weird Patrick Kane deal. Shea Weber is now an Arizona Coyote. Like, there's been some pretty interesting moves made by the Coyotes in general, but that's on brand for the Arizona Coyotes. Dane, what's your first impressions on the Coyotes deadline here?
I think of the four teams we've discussed, this being the fourth, I think this is the deadline I like the most from these four teams. I think they made some pretty good moves. I think they did what we just talked about with Anaheim, like where they knew they were going to be a bad team. So like go all out at the deadline and get everything you can. I feel like the Coyotes at least made an effort to do so. Of course, you can always get more. I think any team, whether you're a contender or a, you know, lottery team, you could argue, well, you could have done more. You could have done this. You could have done that. But I mean, the Coyotes, there were a lot of players that were in trade talks. A lot of the defensemen, Chychrun and Gostisbehere, they moved on from those guys. And I think they got decent return. I feel like the Hurricanes got a steal with Gostisbehere, only having to give up a third round pick in 2026. But I mean, hey, that's draft capital for, you know, a veteran player who isn't Shane Gostisbehere. In all reality, he's not going to be around by the time I don't think he's going to be able to contribute by the time the Coyotes are ready to contend. You get something out of it. But even the Jacob Chychrun deal, I don't hate it. A first round pick in 2023, a second round pick in 2024, and a 2026 second round pick. It's not bad, especially, I mean, I feel like Chychrun's just been in trade talks for like a year and a half now. I mean, Even last year, he was kind of at the center of deadline talks. I don't hate this deadline for the Coyotes, and they so many picks in the first three rounds over the next three seasons. Two in the first round this year, four in the third round. In 2024 and 2025, they have four picks in round two. I think the Coyotes, I mean, everyone likes to laugh at them and make fun of them, like, oh, they're playing in a college arena. They're, you know, they're a bad team. They're easy to make fun of. But one, I think the team, like, having watched them now play the Stars three times, like, they always play hard. I mean, Clayton Keller is having a great season. Guys like Nick Schmaltz, Lawson Kraft. I mean, they have guys that can play. And I think they play hard. And I think the front office is trying to do everything they can to build for the future, to build around some of these young guys like Clayton Keller. And I think that they did about all they could. Of course, again, they could have done more. But of the teams we've talked about, I think this is maybe the team that had the best deadline of the four, and I think has the best potential in the future, just because they have so many draft picks that they can either pick players with, or they can move, as we've talked about, some as trade pieces. And I mean, maybe not this year in free agency, but a little ways down the line when they start to put more pieces together and they potentially have a new arena, you can say, hey, look at all these things we have. And who knows, maybe you're able to draw a big name free agent if you have a guy like Connor Bedard on your team and Clayton Keller. If they play their cards right, they could build a pretty attractive roster that could bring in some guys in the future. I don't necessarily think it's going to happen this offseason or even next offseason, but I think the right steps are being taken at the moment with Arizona. That's just the way I see it, though.
The amount of picks that they have in the top, they have over 20, like first three round picks in the next 3 years, over 20. They have like 21, 22, 23. I counted different each time. So, but it was over 20 each time. That's for sure. But that's fantastic. Now, we mentioned the pieces that they acquired. I also think they did a really good job in trading all the pieces that they had. Other than Karel Vemelka, I don't know why he's still there. I think there are a lot of teams who still need goaltending help, and it's funny saying that as the Edmonton Oilers host, but I think he would have been, genuinely, I think he's the most underrated goaltender in the NHL. I think he, as soon as the next organization he plays for, he will become a Vezina Trophy winner. Not just a candidate, a Vezina Trophy winner. I think he's that good. I think it's a shame that he's still there this year, and especially with how well Connor Ingram's been playing for the Coyotes. Bring another guy up, get him some NHL experience in NCAA barn, but get the guy who deserves to be out there playing real time minutes, meaningful minutes, a place. I don't know. That was my one thing for them there. But the other thing I think for the Arizona Coyotes too is, the subtle additions that they made, and more specifically the one that they made with the Edmonton Oilers, and that's with Michael Kesselring. Michael Kesselring has been going through the minors for the last couple of years, came in from college. He was, I believe, a sixth round pick by the Edmonton Oilers way back in 2017. He was a very, very late round pick. And this year leads the American Hockey League in goals by a defenseman. They acquire him, and immediately he gets called up and plays in his first NHL game. Now, that is obviously, he's a victim of circumstance in a very positive way there, but I think that's a very subtle thing for them, adding guys who can play for them now, but also who are playing very well down in the AHL, which is where they'll be breeding most of their players, where you see guys like a Dyson Mayo, who eventually got traded to the Arizona or to the Vegas Golden Knights for, yes, Shea Weber. So I think that's going to be very important for them too, is just kind of those subtle adds too. But Dane, you kind of gave away your answer here, but out of the four teams, who do you think had the best and had the worst trade deadline of the non-competing teams?
Yeah, obviously, you said I gave away my answer. I think Arizona had the best. The worst, it's probably one of the teams in the Pacific. I could probably go back and forth. I'll say San Jose. We knew both teams were going to be bad. I think the Ducks maybe did a little bit more, and I think getting rid of that Klingberg contract and whatnot and getting at least a return for it, pretty big. And I think really I say the Sharks because the Timo Meier deal still feels pretty underwhelming to me.
Yeah, no, 100%. For me, I agree. I think it is the Arizona Coyotes getting off all the assets that they had on the books, getting as much as they can, also getting players who can play for them right now. And I think the worst, I would go with the Ducks. At the start of the season going, oh, we're going to trade this contract for Klingberg, and you had all these guys that you are also going to send out. You didn't. You only have your first round picks over the next 3 years. I think they could have done much better, and they trade off Kulikov as well. Fair enough, but those aren't needle-moving deals in any situation. So best Arizona, worst Anaheim. All righty, let's move on. Enough of the trade deadline. Let's stomp that away. We talked about it for 32 minutes already today. We've gone long, but it's the last time we're talking about the trade deadline, which we always love talking about, so we had to get it out of the way. But real hockey is down the pipeline, and playoff hockey is down the pipeline. But could playoff hockey be down the pipeline for the Calgary Flames? We will talk about that in just a second. But first, today's episode is brought to you by Athletic Greens. Our next partner has a product I use literally every day. I started using AG1 because I wanted to better my gut health, optimize my immune system, and I wanted to do so without taking so many dang pills. And that is exactly what I get with AG1. So what is this stuff? With one delicious scoop of AG1, you're absorbing 75 high-quality vitamins, minerals, whole food source superfoods, probiotics, and adaptogens to help you start your day right. This special blend of ingredients supports your gut health, your nervous system, your immune system, your energy, recovery, focus, aging, all of the things. All of the things. Plus, it's lifestyle friendly. Whether you eat keto, paleo, vegan, dairy-free, or gluten-free, it is all good for you. And it contains less than 1 gram of sugar. No GMOs, no nasty chemicals or artificial anything, all while still tasting great. And it costs less than $3 a day. You're investing in your health, and it's cheaper than your cold brew habit. Athletic Greens has over 7,000 five-star reviews and is recommended by professional athletes. Right now is time to reclaim your health and arm your immune system with convenient daily nutrition. It's just one scoop in a cup of water every day. That is it. No need for a million different pills and supplements to look out for your health. To make it easy, Athletic Greens is going to give you a free 1 year supply of immune supporting vitamin D and 5 free travel packs with your first purchase. All you have to do is visit athleticgreens.com/NHL network. Again, that is athleticgreens.com/NHL network to take ownership over your health and pick up the ultimate daily nutritional insurance. Alrighty, Dane, this game you know pretty well, but it was a heartbreaker for the Dallas Stars, but a big boost for the Calgary Flames last night as the Calgary Flames win 5-4 in Dallas in a rematch from last year's first round of the Stanley Cup playoffs. It was a heartbreaker, Dane, of as Tyler Toffoli scored with just under 10 seconds left, 6.4 seconds, if I'm not mistaken. Yeah.
Yeah. But somewhere in there.
Yeah. I figured you'd probably remember. I apologize. But it was a big win for the Calgary Flames as they were still scraping by for playoff points as they now climb within another 5 points of a playoff spot. And this was a team, Dane, who a lot of people had at the top of the Pacific Division. Are they going to make the playoffs this year?
I don't know. And I know we've had this conversation on and off, and we've talked about Daryl Sutter and whether or not he's coming back next year. The math and the numbers don't necessarily favor Calgary making it. And I lean no because of that reason. Like, Nashville has 3 games in hand. Both teams are tied at 69 points right now, but you want to talk about confusing teams. I think Calgary can be a confusing team because they lost 5 straight, and then the Stars run into a cornered animal last night, and that's kind of what they got. And the Stars weren't able to match the intensity throughout the game, and that's why the game ended the way it did. And the Flames needed that in a big way. But Nashville also, that is a team that you don't know what you're going to get night in and night out. So, it's Nashville, but even if you get within the ballpark of wildcard teams, you're going to have to try to beat out teams like the Edmonton Oilers, the Avalanche, who currently hold the second wildcard spot, and the Winnipeg Jets, who also seem to be teetering up and down here a little bit. So I'm going to say no, just because, one, the Flames have been so inconsistent this year. And also, I think the other teams, no team is perfect, obviously, but I think a lot of these other teams that I just mentioned have more of their things in order. They have more of their ducks in a row, if you will, than Calgary. And even if Calgary does make it, I just don't envision them going very far, although I'm sure they'd be thrilled to get matched up with the Dallas Stars in round one because of how things have gone in their season series this year. Calgary still just seems to have Dallas's number through 2 matchups, and I don't know. I don't think they'll make it. And sure. I think it could make for a very interesting offseason because, again, the expectations were still sky high. You lose Johnny Gaudreau to Columbus. You lose Matthew Tkachuk to Florida. But you get some decent return. Jonathan Huberdeau was one of the best forwards in the league last year. Mackenzie Weegar everyone was like, oh, this is an underrated defenseman. This is a great pickup by the Flames. And, they just haven't really had a ton of identity. And, again, we've talked about it before. They have good pieces. They have Toffoli. They have Lindholm. And they have some good physical players, Backlund, Dylan Dubé, guys like that. And they just haven't been able to put it together. And I think, and again, we talked about Daryl Sutter. I don't know if he comes back next year. I was listening in to a little bit of Locked On Flames. I know that Jess used to host this Tuesday Western Conference episode with you. And she was talking about how amidst that 5-game losing streak, Daryl Sutter is just laughing during press conferences and the team's getting booed off the ice, but he just doesn't really seem that concerned, at least by the way he addresses the media. So even if they make the playoffs, I don't know if he sticks around because they might not make it past the first round. But if they don't make the playoffs, I think Daryl Sutter might be gone.
It's been a frustrating philosophy in Calgary, especially this year with Daryl Sutter. Now, as somebody who has grown up and lived in Alberta his whole life and who has also been on the Oilers side of the Battle of Alberta, there's always been a mutual respect for Daryl Sutter and the Sutter family. However, I think I don't want to say the time has caught up with Daryl. I don't think that's it at all, but I just think specifically for Calgary, I don't think it's right. The Athletic came out with a very interesting graphic the other day. on the Pacific Division and where each team currently sits. And it was a graph of the playoff percentages throughout the season. At the start of the season, the Calgary Flames started between 90 and 100%, almost at 95%, and rose to about 98%. As of right now, the Vegas Golden Knights lead the Pacific Division in playoff probability with 98%. The LA Kings second with 95%. The Edmonton Oilers third with 94%, and tied with them, the Seattle Kraken with 94%. The Calgary Flames currently sit as of right now with a playoff probability of 25%. That is horrendous. The Calgary Flames goaltending also sits at a save percentage of 0.909, which is actually worse than the Edmonton Oilers as well, who sit at a 0.911. There are major issues with the Calgary Flames, including an aging core with a brand new core as well, and the inability, A, to play your prospects, but B, to potentially keep your prospects. This goes back all the way to Adam Fox and could be even as recent as Matthew Coronato this summer. The Calgary Flames are in trouble. The Calgary Flames are not only in trouble this year, but in the future, they could be in the race not only for Connor Bedard, but for many more first-round picks to come. They need an utter upheaval, and it doesn't start with Brad Treliving at all. He needs to be a part of the he needs to be a part of the future for the Calgary Flames. But it's a matter of finding out where the upheaval begins. And that's where I sit with the Calgary Flames. I don't think they make the playoffs. Heck, I think it's even more realistic that the team who is selling at the trade deadline, the Nashville Predators, to make the playoffs. So
I agree.
It's a tough situation. It's a shame, but final thoughts on Calgary. As you mentioned, they face off against they're playing the Predators next, if I'm not mistaken, right?
I think it's Minnesota. I think they have Minnesota tonight. Yeah. They were in Dallas and now they're in Minnesota, which I don't think they'll make the playoffs, but if the Calgary Flames wanted to win that game and keep the Wild at bay from catching up to the Stars for first in the Central, I'll be the biggest Flames fan tonight with that game happening. But yeah, I agree. I don't think they'll make the playoffs. I think Nashville is a little more likely, which would just be hilarious because, again, they were selling at the deadline and like they sold to the Winnipeg Jets, like Nino Niederreiter's there now. And I saw it was another guy who covers the Stars, Sean Shapiro, who's pretty well known amongst Dallas Stars fans. And he tweeted something to the extent of it'd be hilarious if Winnipeg ends up falling out of the playoffs and Nashville somehow sneaks in despite selling to Winnipeg. I don't know if that'll happen. I think I like Winnipeg's chances more than Nashville. That's a different conversation for a different day. Maybe we'll talk about that next week.
True. Here's my actual final question. The Calgary Flames currently sit with 69 points, 5 points out of the final wild card spot, even with the Nashville Predators, who have 3 games in hand against the Calgary Flames. So do the Colorado Avalanche, and the Edmonton Oilers are 1 game ahead of the Calgary Flames and 9 points ahead of the Flames as well for the 4th spot in the Pacific Division. If the Calgary Flames lose tonight, is that the end of their season?
Ooh, that's tricky. It feels weird to say yes. But I mean, it's certainly a backbreaking loss given what just happened. Like I think if they make the playoffs, you could look back to what happened in Dallas on Monday night with the Tyler Toffoli late goal. So
yep.
I feel like you can't outright just say, yes, this is like the make or break game of the season right here. Cause there's still so much hockey left to be played. And that, I mean, they can only control what they can control, which is the games on their schedule, and other teams could fall off. The Predators could collapse. The Winnipeg Jets could full on collapse. Like it could happen, but if I had to lean one way, I mean, I would say yes. I think if they win this game, the momentum starts to build. And it's easier said than done because it's game two of a back-to-back in a tough building and a tough place to play. But they've got some favorable matchups on the schedule. Later this week, they have Anaheim at home. They have Ottawa at home on Sunday, which the Ottawa Senators are a team on the up and up. But they got Arizona on the schedule. They've got Anaheim, Vancouver. They've got some tough matchups too. They got Dallas and Vegas and Los Angeles a couple times here in March. But it certainly can be done. It's just a matter of what Flames team we're going to get. They've been kind of a Jekyll and Hyde team all year.
They as 100% have been. Some may even say Bonnie and Clyde. But as mentioned, three games in hand for Nashville Predators and Colorado Avalanche. However, some may see it as three games they can lose. Let's wrap up today's episode. I mean, they could very well could. Let's wrap up today's episode with that. A long one again between Dane and I, but that's okay. We like to talk, and I feel like this has been a fun one to talk about either way. Dane, let's wrap it up there. Where can the people find you?
As always, people can find me on social media, just on Twitter at @Dane_Lewis. If you want more information on the Dallas Stars and their attempts to not lose in the final 6 seconds of their games, you can find our show at Locked On Stars on Instagram and Twitter. And our show is free and available on YouTube as well as your favorite podcasting platform of choice. And it's, right now it's a lot of post-deadline talk as well, with as well as the games happening. But Max Domi, Evgeny Dodonov, off to a pretty good start with their first weeks or so with the Dallas Stars. So always plenty to talk about with the Stars team, good or bad.
You love to hear. And for me, you can find me personally at The Real Holden 40. I believe that is also my Elite Prospects name, so make sure you find me there. But you don't care about me, you care about the Oilers, and you can find Locked On Oilers on Twitter at Locked On Oilers, exactly how it sounds. Or if you haven't subscribed to us on YouTube yet, what are you doing? We had a nice little Sheldon Surrey jersey the other day. So, yeah, and Dustin Penner. We had no pancakes around, so everybody was safe. Let's wrap it up there, everybody. Thank you so much for joining us on Locked On NHL Western Conference Tuesdays. We shall see you next week, probably around the same time, hopefully. But check out our YouTube page at Locked On NHL to stay tuned. See you, everybody.